Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi. On this week's program, Guy finds podcast host's personal Facebook account and slides into DMs. Hacker goes off to household cameras to watch people sleep. And person makes unbreaking eye contact with multiple passengers on tram. All this and more on this week's Creep Show. Yes, welcome to Creep Show. It's creepy but a showy. My name is Sandro, and I talk like this now. Joining me, as always, is Zach. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing so much better knowing that this week's show is brought to you by Toy Box. That's right, Toy Box. Get a bunch of toys and they're crap, but they're in a box. Toy Box.
I mean, that's pretty clear what they are. They're pretty all about, you know, boxes and toys.
And joining us this week, for some reason, every time she's on, I do an intro with an accent. It's Jen Spears. How you going?
How did I get here? I was just asleep and I woke up and now I'm here. Can somebody help me? I'm scared.
Creep Show.
You're here forever now.
That's what I was thinking, because I was like, I know that it's called Creep Show because it's about like spooky, scary, creepy stuff, but I was like, if I actually really wanted to commit to the name, it would just be random guys sliding into people's DMs.
That would be the creepiest.
I just got sent a dick pic. Yeah, I never thought of it that way.
That's a horror film we live day to day.
But yeah, it's oldie but a goodie. We talk about films from 1987 in the order they came out in. This week, it is the sequel to the classic horror anthology movie Creepshow, Creepshow 2.
Yeah.
And first impressions, how we usually do this, because it's a sequel, the person who picks watches the first one as well. I picked. I rewatched the first one. It was great. Jen, you also watched the first one for the first time?
Yes, for the first time. I loved it. As you know, I like Stephen King, so the fact that, you know, he had a hand in it, obviously, wrote the screenplay. Yeah, I like, I'm not big on horror, but it was just the right level of creepy.
Yes, because it's not like, it's creepy, but it's not necessarily scary, and it's very cheesy, particularly the first one.
And I mean, you know, when you've got a Savini on board with special effects makeup, that it's going to be gory. But it's going to be gory to the point that you know it's fake. It's clearly fake. So it's, yeah, right. It's cheesy, creepy fun.
Yeah, definitely drawing influences from comic books and like TV shows from the 50s. With the second one, though, I found that it was trying to be a little bit more 80s B movie esque. Yeah. Zach, I think you've seen an episode of the TV show at my house when it was airing.
Yes.
So with that being your main look into the Creepshow world, how did you find this movie?
So, I have several things to say about each of the stories. But I'll note that this one definitely, at least the first one especially, wasn't exactly creepy of a story. It wasn't exactly a horror story. It was more just like a general story.
Classic revenge story.
Yeah,
it's a revenge story. Yeah, like an action film almost, rather than creepy.
Yeah.
So that was definitely I actually quite liked the first story.
Yeah.
So it pains me to say that, but it wasn't exactly like a creepy horror. It
wasn't anything new, yeah.
Yeah. And the second one's pretty good. I like this. That one's,
really?
That one's a horror. Okay. That one's pretty horror. I mean, in the horror creepy aspect.
Oh, yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that one gives me existential dread thinking about it, you know? It's like, oh, creepy lake monster. Oh, one of my friends could let me fall asleep and get eaten.
Maybe my friend will sexually assault me. We'll get into that.
Yeah, exactly.
Had you seen the first one, Zach?
I remember that I definitely have seen the first one at some point when I was like 7. And I don't remember literally anything from it.
Okay, that's probably good. There's no trauma there, because that seems like a young age.
I was probably older. I was probably more like 11. But
Yeah, okay.
I can't remember anything from around there.
Man, if I was 7 watching it, I'd be like, why is the guy from the Naked Gun trying to kill people?
Yeah.
That would be the scariest thing about it.
Yeah. Why is Gulliver buried in the sand?
But yeah. Yeah, the second one, it loses some of the magic, but I think because I'm such a big Stephen King fan, and these three short stories are so obviously based off Stephen King short stories, that I still like it. But yeah, some of the magic, I think, is gone, unfortunately. But it's still all right.
Yeah. I think a lot of the magic for me was lost in the animation in the second one. Like, I loved in the first one that they just kind of flick through the comic book and then there's the story, whereas having the narrator introduce each story and the animation was a bit weird. I don't know. I'm like, spend less time on the animation and have another story in there. Because the first one had 5 and this one had 3 and it could have easily had 4. So anyway.
Yeah, the animation was quite low quality.
Yeah.
Well, the last story, I felt like it went for a while.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why did we need her internal monologue? Like, after every action scene, driving off through the snow.
It was one of those stories where I was like, if this was written, this would be really interesting.
I said that exact same thing, yeah.
Yeah, because it's filmed, it's just this actor talking to themselves in a car for like
now 10 minutes. I have a good excuse for not being home on time. I was like, we don't need to know that. Just, we get it.
We understand. We get the concept.
All right, we'll go into depth with these stories in a second. But first of all, I do have to mention, as always, the show's lights are kept on by Patreon, the Bad Porridge Clubs over there on Patreon. So if you haven't yet, sign up. We did a poll. I don't know what the next episode's going to be on. Maybe the original Mortal Kombat films. It's looking like we're going to be covering those.
I'd like to do those. So, yeah.
So, yeah, you can check that out. Link in the description. But, Zach, what were my other options for this week's episode?
So, for this week, we had some interesting choices. We had The All-Nighter, which was a bunch of young adults graduating college. But there's drama.
Of course.
And apparently it was pretty popular, but it was also really garbage.
Great.
American Ninja 2, The Confrontation. Now, this sounds like a movie. We definitely got to do this one at some point. That's two army guys find out that there's a big bad guy, and he's kidnapping all these Marines and brainwashing them to become ninjas. Sounds... And we obviously, last week, we had some criticism over this plot line. Like, why didn't he just hire ninjas to begin with?
It's two different skill sets, being a Marine and being a ninja. Just hire ninjas.
Just get ninjas. Just don't go through the middleman of brainwashing Marines. I feel like that's an unnecessary step.
Well, aren't Marines, like, pretty good at some shit already? Like, so you wouldn't have to train them. You just have to brainwash them into wanting to kill people.
Ooh, true.
Just brainwash Marines into, you know, killing people that you want them to kill.
Oh, yeah.
Why do they need to be a stereotype?
Yeah. It's again, there's a lot of criticism here.
Basically, all you're doing is teaching them to hide well. But I feel like Marines can already do that. I feel like I need to watch this film now.
Yeah, exactly. we have Malone, which is a Burt Reynolds film. He's an ex-CIA assassin who helps out this small little town fight against an evil crime boss.
So it's Magnificent Seven, but just Burt Reynolds.
Correct.
Which sounds awful, so no.
Exactly.
Yep. And the most disappointing, My Life as a Dog, which sounds amazing until you realize it's a Swedish drama about a young boy who is sent to live with his relatives. And it doesn't have anything to do with dogs, but maybe his relatives treat him like one?
Is that one of those indie kind of films that they've just named that? Like,
yeah, probably.
It'll have, like, a passing reference.
I was so sad when it wasn't, like, the kid gets turned into a dog.
Yeah.
And then they have to realize that he's turned into a dog, and then at the last moment they realize, you know, he doesn't want to become human, he wants to stay a dog or something stupid, you know.
Mm.
I feel like 80% of the audience has bought a ticket for that movie. That's what they're expecting.
Although that could have easily been a story in Creepshow, though. A kid turns into a dog.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel like that's been done before, though, huh? There's like, what's the one with the snowman, Michael Keaton? Wait, what's the one where the dad turns... Is it? That's a recent film where the dad turns into a dog, I'm sure. Is that like...
Yeah. No, that one's a recent film. I can't remember the guy who played that.
Wasn't that a... Spacey film?
Oh, no, yeah, I think it is a Kevin Spacey film. Ugh. So we won't talk about it.
Speaking of Creepshow. this film was released May 1st. It is a sequel to Creepshow, as we mentioned, from 1982. The reason why that film works so well is because there was kind of a holy trinity with that movie. Because you've got writing from Stephen King, you've got effects by Tom Savini, and you've got directing from George A. Romero, three absolute legends. For this one, it is still Stephen King stories, except the screenplay isn't written by him. It's written by George Romero by himself with none of his co-writers, and he's adapting three King short stories. So King didn't really have anything to do with the writing of it. Tom Savini is still doing the visual effects, though, but not as much as he did on the first one. I think he might have just been overseeing the project. He does play the creep, though, so that's cool. And for the director, it's directed by Michael Gornick. His only feature directing credit, although he has done TV show work on the anthology series Tales from the Dark Side, which is apparently quite good. And he was director of photography on a bunch of Romero films, including the first Creepshow. So he has been around doing some horror stuff.
Okay.
For the cast, Tom Savini is in the creep costume, but the voice of the creature and doing all of the puns and stuff in between the stories is John Silver, who's done a lot of voice acting work. There's also George Kennedy, who plays the shop owner in the first story. He's the police captain from the Naked Gun movies. He's very good.
Oh, yeah, I liked him.
I loved him. He was great.
Dorothy L'Amour from the Road 2 movies with Bing Crosby. She's in this as his wife. It's her last ever movie before she died in the early 90s.
Oh.
The four 25-year-old looking teens from The Raft aren't big names and haven't done anything, but one of them did almost die from hypothermia during filming that part of the film and had to be taken to hospital to recover before they could finish it.
Huh.
I wondered if the water was actually cold or if they filmed it in summer and it was actually quite warm.
That's funny because literally one of the lines as they're getting in is that it's absolutely freezing and that they could die from it. So
your heart might stop.
It's very ironic. Yeah, that's very ironic that one of them nearly died when the film directly pointed that out.
For the third story, the lead is Lois Childs from the Bond movie Moonraker.
Yeah.
And also Stephen King's in there as a truck driver, because, of course, yes, he's great.
Yep.
The one actor that I didn't pick up until I looked at it later was Holt McCallany, who plays the baddie boy in the first one.
Ah.
He's the boss in Mindhunter.
Oh, okay. He's also white, playing a Native American.
That's what I was like, I don't reckon he's Native American at all. But sure enough, he plays Bill Tench in Mindhunter.
Okay.
So he is white as white is, which I was not surprised, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a bit of a given, unfortunately. And then he gets murdered for it because racism's bad.
Yeah. Everyone dies always.
Yeah, no one gets good endings in this.
No, actually.
No.
Maybe the kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the kid. Yeah. I would argue the ooze monster has a great ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's super happy.
You're right, actually, because the ooze monster was very much the villain until that guy assaulted her, and then the ooze monster redeemed himself by killing him.
I'm no longer rooting for this guy, because what a creep.
Yeah, sure.
Well, for the reception, 29% on Rotten Tomatoes, audience score of 41, which is a massive drop from the 74% that the first one has. A lot of people say that it kind of missed the comic book charm and took itself a bit too seriously. But a lot of that is probably due to the fact that this cost $3.4 million, which is a massive drop from the $9 million that the first one cut. So their budget was basically slashed in half.
Yeah, why is that? That's so weird.
I'm not sure. The first one did pretty well.
Yeah, you'd think after the first one doing so well that, you know.
Oh, you know what it is. The first one was Warner Brothers. This seems to be a much smaller distributor.
Yeah. You know, directors not as well known, not as, in my opinion, not as well known a cast either.
Mm.
They were kind of like, eh, we'll see.
But based off, yeah, $3.5 million, what do you think it made, Jen?
Number two, budget was $3.5 million.
Yes.
10, 15?
10 to 15.
I don't think it made much.
Okay. Well, how about you, Zach?
I'm going to go a bit higher. I'm going to go 25. That's my guess.
Well, the winner is Jen, $14 million.
No shit. So it didn't make much at all. How much did the first one make?
26, 25?
Yeah, it did well.
Yeah.
Now, we do have a segment that we've been doing this year, which is the tagline segment, because we realized that taglines from the 80s are hilarious. So I've got the three taglines of this movie according to IMDb. You both got to pick your favorite. There are three of them. The first one is three blood-curdling tales of horror.
Blood-curdling, I don't know about that.
Yeah. When the curtain goes up, the terror begins.
Well, we don't have... Yeah, okay.
I like that one slightly more.
Do cinemas even have curtains anymore? Even in the 80s, oh, in 87?
That's true.
Yeah, but it's like a creep show, you know? So it's not like a creep movie. It's a creep show. So I'll give it that one. I'll give it that one.
The last one is good to the last gasp.
I like that. I like that one.
What?
I don't really get it, but I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that. All right, sure. Yeah. I have no idea what that's supposed to mean, but I like it.
Not great taglines for this movie.
Good to the last gasp.
All right, let's just jump into the synopsis. It opens with the creep driving a car. The number plate of the car is creep. And he's like, hey, kid, I've got a magazine for you to read.
I am the child catcher, basically.
Yeah.
And the makeups were really good. And you're like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
This is going to be... Yeah, the framing device is this cool creep guy.
Boy, I love practical effects. I'm so glad that they have those in this film, practical effects.
And then it turns animated.
Wouldn't it have been cheaper just to not animate it, do you think?
Probably.
Yeah.
Like, you already had him in the makeup. Why not just do the whole scene in the makeup and then, like, all the consequential animation scenes? Just film them. I don't know.
I don't know how they would have done the Venus flytrap stuff.
That could have gone animation then at the end.
Yeah. You could have had that last one.
Yeah.
It, like, turns comic booky at the end where they get eaten. Yeah.
Well, because they did that in the first one. They had live action and then it went just... It didn't go animation... It just went comic booky and it was cool.
Mm.
I kind of liked the 80s cartoon sort of aspect of it, but it wasn't exactly high quality, unfortunately.
No.
And the voices of the other kids were like really young children voices.
Yeah. Yes.
Like 7-year-olds voicing what should I assume were like 12-year-olds.
Yeah. What? The like the big bully or whatever it was that squashed the plant.
Yeah, no.
That was almost for comical effect, though, I thought.
I think you're giving them a lot of credit here, Zach.
Yeah, because the framing device is, in the first one, Joe Hill, Stephen King's son, has this abusive dad, and he's like, I'm going to get a voodoo doll, and I'm going to make you feel pain.
Yeah, and it's not clear until the end that that's what he's doing. Like,
yeah.
It's just kind of cool. The dad throws out the comic book, and then it pans to the comic book on the ground, and then... It just, as the pages turn, as each story, it didn't need an intro. I don't know.
Whereas with this one, it's, the kid orders a Venus flytrap and then the bullies attack him and then get eaten by giant Venus flytraps.
And it's not, like, the stories aren't connected by that at all, like...
Yeah.
No, that was just, like, a separate story of its own.
And the creep loves his puns as well, which was really not... They weren't good.
I did appreciate them. I like a good pun or two, and I like the overabundance of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because he said boys and ghouls.
Yep.
But he didn't make a pun out of boys.
I thought he said boars and ghouls.
Yeah, which was like, what? Like, if you're going to go with creepy, like, puns, like, make it, like, I don't know, but like if you're gonna go ghouls, boars doesn't really make sense because you're just calling them either boring or pigs. Boils maybe, yeah.
Boils and ghouls.
Yeah, much better.
I quite like the one at the end of the raft where they're always talking about oil slicks and just the story ended in it and he was like, well, that was a rather slick story, wasn't it? And I was
like, how many times did he say, have you ever seen an oil slick? Like 6 times.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That was weird.
Hey, back then, no one had seen oil slicks before. Nowadays, we see them on the news almost every week. So, you know.
We'll jump into, the first story. Before we get to the raft, the first story is Old Chief Woodenhead.
Mm.
Which I went into being like, oh boy, this is not going to age well. Yep. And it didn't age well for different reasons than I thought it wouldn't have aged well for.
Yeah.
So what happens in this story, Jen? What's the setting?
Setting in an old western mining town, by the look of it. And it's a guy who runs a general store who hasn't had a customer in, well, a while, but he's still working away and his wife's like, you know, you gotta retire, you gotta quit, like you've given this country, this town so much and they've just taken away from you. Anyway, she has a bit of a thing against Native Americans by the sound of it because uncle, I forget his name, Ben, is it Benjamin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A Native American man rocks up and she's like, you can't keep letting him walk all over you. He owes you so much money. Anyway, he comes in and offers the proprietor a piece of valuable jewelry, silver and turquoise, as by way of collateral, I guess. You hold on to this until we pay back our debt, and if we can't, you get to keep it. Anyway, they leave. He gets robbed by 3 punks, a fat one, a rich one, and a Native American one with a shotgun. During the robbery, both him and his wife are shot, killed. Subsequently, the wooden Native American chief statue that is out the front of the general store that's been lovingly painted and looked after over the years comes to life and seeks revenge upon the 3 punks. And in a classic generalization and stereotype, he scalps the main villain.
Yeah.
And I think the problem with this story, which is the reason I liked this story, was they spent too much time establishing the old pair.
So much time.
Yeah. they gave the lowdown, like that they had grandchildren coming on the way, you know, that they'd been in this town and helping out, that they were the nicest couple, you know. They spent like the whole story focusing on them to, you know, make you like them. I like them. I like the cute little couple. I like the guy, and he's painting little war paints on the thing. And
the wife was pretty racist, though.
Oh, yeah.
Even after she was like, oh, he's given us the jewelry, and he's like, I'm very grateful. And she's like, you know what? You aren't like the rest of them. And I was like, Jesus.
Yeah.
No, you've proven me wrong. It's like, wow, just because he gave you, like, a bunch of really important stuff, like, now you're okay with him, like.
Yeah.
She deserved to die. No.
Wow.
No. My problem was, like, because a lot of the other stories in number one, they're all slow burns. Like, they're all a lot of dialogue and then, like, a lot of horror at the end. This was just kind of like, why didn't the wooden chief intercept the murders? Like, why did he wait until they were murdered before he, like, suddenly got really quick and good at fighting?
Yeah, this is very much one that, like, I feel like it would work so much better in words on a page.
Yeah.
Because you've got the setting up of the characters and you'd be in their head a bit more and that would be good. And then it would be like more of a punch in the gut when they die. And then you're like, well, now I want them, like these bad people, to get their comeuppance. Whereas when you're watching it, especially when the movie's called Creepshow, you're like, all right, when's the horror starting?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And I think what should have happened is we should have had maybe, you know, a 2-minute intro for them. It's like, oh, they're down on their luck. Oh, they're this nice couple. Maybe he, like, they just have a scene where he gives away some stuff to someone who can't afford it or something, you know.
Which is what he's been doing all these years, but they don't really, they just talk a lot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they talk a lot about it. Instead, they should have showed it and then the wife coming in and being like, why did you give it away? We're making no money because you're doing all this shit.
I think the other thing was that I was that whole scene when the robbery was taking place, I was waiting for the statue to come in and like intervene because they showed that it moved.
Yeah.
It wasn't that the deaths like made it live, brought it to life, or the spilling of blood or whatever you want to say. That the guy said hello as he was leaving. He said goodbye to the statue and the statue moved its eyebrows. And so it's established that it is conscious this whole time and didn't do anything about the murder. So I'm just kind of a bit like annoyed at the statue that
yeah. Well, I think the problem is that it did move beforehand and it shouldn't have. It should have been like the deaths of these people brought it to life. That was that was clearly the intention of the story, but for the movie they like made it move a little bit to try and indicate to you that it was important.
Yeah.
Which was dumb and sort of ruins the story in that aspect.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, that's definitely a big issue with this one is which I think is it's the same with there's a few other Stephen King adaptations where that happens as well, like the Pet Cemetery, the first one, the first like Pet Cemetery adaptation. It did that as well, where like it teased that just hold on, there's some violence that's gonna happen eventually, and that completely just ruins the tension and makes you expect certain things to happen, which is where this,
you know, that the statue is gonna come to life.
Yeah.
So you had the, like, 2-minute intro for them, then they get murdered, and then the rest of the story is we see the statue hunting them down and murdering them.
Yeah.
Like, that should have been the main focus.
That took, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, it took no time at all, and it wasn't as satisfying, I think, as it could have been. No. So I would have liked to see more of him hunting them down, or, like, I don't know. And he murders the fat guy by stuffing candy down his throat or something like that. Right. You know, some classic ironic deaths, you know?
Or, like, have a bit of a, spend some time on him stalking them and, like, them seeing him and then he's not there anymore. You know, a classic, you got to frighten them first, you know? Killing them's too easy.
What you're saying is you should creep them out a bit?
Creep show them out a bit, you know?
Hey! That is true. Yeah, the deaths in this short, definitely compared to the last one, because I was kind of worried that a lot of this movie would be way tamer than the first one, and I think that helped with the last one's gore being so, it worked on a different level, because I wasn't expecting them to go that far, considering how the first two went. But yeah, like, it was very unsatisfying. I mean, well, one of them gets shot in the head, you don't even see the second guy's death, and then the third one is just, he gets scalped off screen.
Oh yeah, the second guy gets axed in silhouette, in shadow. And then, the first guy gets arrows through, which is pretty cool.
And I got a great quote from this one, which is, once they see this hair, they're going to say, Sam, get over here.
Yeah, the main robber, who is the guy in Native American body paint, which was awful, he's super obsessed with his hair because he wants to go to Hollywood. And he spends a lot of time, I would say probably maybe 4 to 5 minutes of screen time of this story is dedicated to his hair.
Which, admittedly, I didn't expect the scalping. Like, all that hair talk, I should have gone, uh-oh, I see where this is going, because I'm usually pretty good at picking that kind of thing. Maybe because I'm not racist, so that's not the first thing I think of when I think of Native American people. But yeah, at the end, I was like, oh, he cut his hair off. Oh, yeah, that's sad. He'll lose his power. And I was like, oh, he scalped him. Oh, okay. But the hair was pretty frizzy, I have to say. It wasn't that nice, Sam.
It's true.
Yeah, you needed more conditioner, Sam.
Yeah.
Conditioner, yeah.
Well, that's why they were going to Vegas, right? To get conditioner.
Yeah. I don't like revenge stories, really, as a rule. Unless it's the person themselves taking revenge. But it's when it's someone doing it on their behalf.
Yeah.
I don't know. It wasn't anything I hadn't seen before.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And it ends with, which I thought was a really odd moment, where Uncle Ben comes back to the store and sees the statue holding the scalp and is like, thank you. I'm like, well, if that's your nephew.
No. At 2 points here, he's like, thank you, you can rest now. I'm like, what? What do you mean? You don't know what's happened. All you see is you can see his nephew's hair in the statue's hand. He has no idea what's happened.
Is that meant to imply that he kind of, like, had something to do with it? Like,
maybe.
Yeah, like, did he... Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. He set this all up.
Or he... not necessarily set it up, but he's known that the statue has that magical powers, or he gave it its magical powers.
Well, he knew that. No, no, no. What I'm saying is he set this all up. He gave them the jewels.
The jewels, and then was like, I gave the shopkeeper some jewels today, Sam.
Oh.
You're a piece of shit. You'll never make it in Hollywood.
So he did this whole thing to get rid of his debt.
Oh. He got rid of his debt, and he got his stupid nephew murdered.
I don't like that idea, because that makes him the villain, and I think, no.
Yeah, no. But, like, why does he, like, thank the statue and he can rest? He doesn't know what's happened. He True. Doesn't know that the shopkeepers has been murdered. He doesn't know that the nephew. It only makes sense if he set it all up.
Mm. But if that was the case, and this, like, just going off the theme and the tone of the rest of the film, he would have said it and then done, like, an evil smile at the camera.
Before we move on, I did have one quote that I wanted to mention, which I thought was not a very well-written line. At the very start, the wife is like, a chief without war paint is like a store owner without a town to sell his goods to.
What the fuck?
What? No.
A chief without war paint is just not at war.
Yeah.
Also, I'm sorry, but when he woke up and put the war paint on his face, he already had that side. Do the other side, dude. You're missing your left cheek, not your right cheek.
Yes, I noticed that as well. I guess it's just because they couldn't get the costume to move his other hand.
To do his other hand.
Let's move on to the raft, the second story. Zach, brief synopsis. What happens in the raft?
So this is probably the most creepy of all of both of them. All the stories, I'd say.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of jerks on a road trip. They're, a couple of young adults, fresh from college.
25-year-old teens.
Yeah, 35-year-old teens.
Yeah.
They go to a lovely, serene lake in the middle of nowhere, where no one's around to witness the horrors that are about to begin. They go swimming, and they spot oil slick, which eats some ducks. And then it goes to eat them, and they're like, oh no! So they hop on a raft. And then one of their friends gets eaten by it. And they're like, damn, have you ever seen an oil slick before?
Times four.
And then they get slowly picked off one by one by this weird ooze monster thing.
It's a tarp and a lake.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I have a user review that mentions that it is, in fact, a tarp. I think that's about it.
That's pretty much the whole story.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it.
Just for the sake of the listeners, if you haven't heard, if you haven't watched this movie, just to give you a real idea as to the level of jerks we're dealing with, the opening line for the story while they're in the car driving to the lake is, I feel the need for weed. Just, that should give you an idea of how terrible these characters are.
Yeah.
I didn't even pick that up. That's... Oh, yep. God.
That's great.
I did appreciate that the monster at first you couldn't really see what it was. And that I do like that about a lot of Stephen King monsters is you're not quite sure. Like they could have just had a giant crocodile or like a giant something. But you were like, what is, you're learning as the protagonists are learning, like, what the fuck is that? And then until it kills somebody and then you're like, oh, okay, that's what we're dealing with. But you just have no idea.
I mean, still at the end, you don't know what it is.
No, but you know how it kind of kills, you know. Yeah.
Oh, and the oil, like, there was some disgusting kills in this one as well.
Yeah.
I couldn't watch a lot of it, actually. I don't do well with, like, skin...
Melting,
and, like, wetness. I don't like wet horror. I think I've said this before. I don't like wet horror, like, innards and blood and, like, melting and... stuff, so I was having an awful time.
Oh, that's right. I remember you saying that after that particular episode of Lovecraft Country. This is definitely in that level of, the skin. Because, like, there's that one where the guy's standing on the raft and it kind of comes up through his foot and, like, the skin just, gross.
And then pulls him through and his legs in the air.
Yeah.
And you're like, Jesus. And, like, stickiness, like, flesh being pulled off.
Yeah, I was pretty grossed out as well by when the oil slick started making noises, and they were just fart noises, and I thought that some guy on the raft was pooping.
Take this, you ooze monster!
I did enjoy, I do respect the setup of the classic trope of the whore, the jock, the Fool and the Virgin, or the Madonna of the four characters.
Yeah.
And then they fucked with the order of that. If you ever seen Cabin in the Woods. So I was like, well, she'll, the Virgin, the redhead girl, she's like a bit shy and she's not smoking the weed initially and, you know, blah, blah, blah. She'll either die at last or survive. She was the first to go.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. They're fucking with the like classic order of that horror deaths, which was cool. And then the whore, as she's known, is kind of left almost till last.
Yeah, left until that. The creepiest scene in the movie where... Yeah.
I just could not believe that that's what they did.
This is the other thing about the sequel. The first film, like, horror in the 80s was well known for being very gross, very male-gazy, as we've seen with most of the films we've done this year. And, yeah, that was part of the appeal, was you go to it, there's some scares and also some nudity. This film, the first one didn't lean into that at all, which is why I think that film is a classic. This one very much does. And, yeah, it's a little gross.
Oh, I think it's very gross.
Well, it was kind of like, I think it would have been like, cooler isn't the right term, but if those two had been flirting maybe, or like there was a, they were dating or something, and like it was a consensual thing where they're like, we're so exhausted and scared, like let's have sex in case we die. And then instead she was, I thought, dead, but then it turns out she was asleep. And he just fucking got all creepy and like, oh, just like, I was like, he should die. He's done. That's it. I don't care anymore.
Yeah, well, he does die. And I feel like that's the most satisfying bit is when he's like, ha ha, I've escaped, you fucking stupid thing. And then it just eats him.
Yeah.
Oh, that was I was like, it's going to come out of the water. Like, come on.
Yeah. At no point does he know that it can't, you know, leave the water.
It was just such an odd choice, I think, that. Moment. Just came out of nowhere. And I was reading a review where this guy, I've like screenshot it, and he said, Gornick, the director. Gornick even manages to elicit some eroticism out of the episode with some brief nudity as our ostensible hero, a teenage boy, finds himself unable to stop from fondling the passed out hot girl he's been smitten with. A nice naughty moment that would be hard pressed to get away with shooting in today's climate.
Ugh.
Yeah, I wonder why. I wonder why it'd be hard-pressed. That's so weird.
I was like, it's not necessary. Like, have a cool sex scene instead, you know? Like, that would have been cooler. That's more of a classic thing. But also, like, if you need to get away with something, then you know it's wrong. Anyway, that pissed me off.
Yeah, no, it was, yeah.
It's not erotic at all. It's not erotic. You see her boobs, but there's no way is it erotic. Like, sorry.
It was doubly horrible because she dies from it as well.
Yes. I felt more sick in that moment than I did with any of the other gore, and I felt quite sick for a lot of it.
Yeah.
Ugh. But yeah, I loved that whole story. I loved it, except that just ruined it for me.
Yeah, it was fun. It was cheesy. And then that, yeah, it just felt very unnecessary.
Very unnecessary. But like, I just feel like there's so many cooler ways you could have done that. Like they could have... woken up, been scared, you know, gotten a bit into it. She's, you know, at the point of climax and he thinks she's enjoying it, but she's actually dying and it's cries of pain. You know, boom, I just fixed it.
You fixed the movie.
Mm.
And it's R-rated. Was it this one R-rated as well?
I think so, yeah.
R-rated already. Mm. Like, you may as well just go all out with it.
Yeah.
Anyway. And then, like, the no swimming sign at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you not just mention that there's people here during summer? And that they all swim there, like, what?
Yeah, the very end of the story is when everyone's died, it pans across the lake and we see a no swimming sign, even though, as you mentioned, they already established people swim here all the time.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, because the fact that there's a raft which is built to dive off of, that's the point of those things.
Yeah, we don't know, but maybe the thing only comes out during the winter or something, and... that's why there's no people around here at the moment, because anybody else who's been swimming's gotten it.
Got melted and, yeah, I didn't like the second girl's death. I mean, it was good, and then she kind of, her skeleton kind of comes out.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's cool, and I was like, but I feel sick in my tummy. I appreciate that that's cool, but I don't like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely the most horrifying of the stories, I'd
yeah,
say.
Absolutely.
And it's a different sort of horror to the first film as well, because like the ending of the Leslie Nielsen one is the most frightening for me, I think, just because it's like there's a lot of noise, and for some reason lots of noise is quite upsetting for me. I don't know why.
A lot of noise, he's kind of laughing, he's kind of a bit crazy, and yeah, it's a bit scary.
But like that is still very corny. I think it's probably because the background then goes like weird comic book colors and everything, which is not in this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, like this felt more like a Piranha than a creep show.
I like those kind of the setups like your Cujo, where it's like you're stuck in this car, there's something out there that can kill you, how are you getting out of this kind of thing. And that kind of, that's what the raft gave me, that creeping terror, like, oh, could you swim for it? Oh, but you wouldn't be fast enough. Maybe you could paddle the raft, but it's anchored to the bottom of, like, how? But this constant looming threat, and I thought that was much scarier than your obvious gore and...
Yeah, much scarier than a giant wooden statue that takes revenge, that does the right thing for you. Like, that's not scary because it's a revenge story, you know?
Yeah, it's always scarier when the bad thing is preying on everybody, good or bad. Like, it's just,
definitely. You know. All right, well, the third and final story is The Hitchhiker. The general premise for this is there is this married woman, she's cheating on her husband with a sex worker who charges by the orgasm, which is funny, but she is late to meet up with the husband. So she is in her car, she's hurrying home, and along the way manages to hit and kill a hitchhiker on the road, and she's then haunted by what we assume is her own subconscious, but there might be something supernatural at play. A zombie sort of version of this hitchhiker is just, is spooking her. She keeps killing it over and over again, but it keeps coming back more broken and more destroyed and more disgusting until she eventually gets home and is killed by this hitchhiker. And her husband finds her in the car with the hitchhiker's sign around her neck, meaning it probably wasn't all in her head. Very spooky.
Very creepy.
This was very long.
Yes.
So long.
And you just summarized it within like a minute.
Basically, it's I Know What You Did Last Summer, but it's not a fisherman. Sorry. Well, this is obviously before I Know What You Did Last Summer, but it, you know, that kind of hurt, killed someone. You had the choice to be, do the right thing and you didn't. And now you're getting haunted by it.
Yes. And the moments where she's getting attacked by this hitchhiker was pretty scary, just purely because of the makeup, I think. Like, this is where the makeup goes full force. I loved the Terminator-ness of it, where it keeps getting destroyed, but it keeps coming back, but, like, parts of it are missing until you get to the end, where it's just this destroyed face. The tongue's, like, hanging out.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't look at it. I was like, nah, that's it. It reminded me of the Dawn of the Dead or Day of the Dead, where they just, like, focus on a zombie eating someone's intestines for way longer than they needed to. I'm like, he doesn't need to be licking her face for 30 seconds. We get it. Oh, he's creepy. Yeah. Felt a bit gratuitous. and I know it wasn't Romero, this, he wasn't directing it, but it felt that kind of gratuitous, like, look how cool and scary this is. And we've spent a lot of money and time on this, so we're going to show it for longer than we need to. And then it kind of goes, and then I'm like, okay, I'm done.
But I thought it was cool, Jen. I liked that it was on screen. I liked that it was all bloody and gross and horrible.
I think because I can only stomach so much of that.
Yeah.
My weakness is that is practical effects. They just look creep me out. Just
That's because they're the best. Practical effects are just superior to every other effect. That's a fact. And there's no opposition to that.
No.
Zero.
No. I respect the actor that played the hitchhiker who also did all his own, who was a stuntman.
Oh.
Some of the scenes where he's like rolling down the hill and he's punching the bonnet and he's still on the car. I was like, this guy.
Yeah, I was wondering how they did that because that looked incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, he like fully like did it on a moving car. So cool.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, the makeup, is it the scene where he's getting pummeled into a tree? That was like, it was just like, just the amount of just him getting destroyed was so, the chronology of the hitchhiker's body throughout this whole story. It was a journey, man. You know, he started off as a person and then he got hit and then he's kind of a zombie and then like his arm gets like slightly like cut and it's just, it carries across the whole thing. Just like stuff like that was really interesting.
But, and the whole way through he was awfully grateful and polite, constantly thanking her for giving him a ride.
Thanks for the ride, lady.
She also, again, just, like, didn't react the way that people would react. Like, after she's killed him, she first sees him on the ramp, and then he's gone. And she kind of just, like, drives 100 metres and then stops and looks back. And I'm like, don't just drive. Just keep driving. Like, why are you only driving 30 metres away? Like, sorry.
Yeah, no one would stop there. They would just keep going.
Oh, and that was when she said the line, "Ah, you're seeing things, bitch." And I was like, why would you, like, one, first of all, why would you call yourself that? It felt really weird.
Yeah.
The problem with this, I think, is the writing. They spend so much time with her in the car being like, well, I've got to get back because if I don't get back, this will happen. But maybe he's not at home.
My husband's going to divorce me.
Also, why was she meeting him at like 11:30 at night? And like the whole driving home, like, maybe he, you know, maybe he's running late. No, absolutely not. Not Mr. Blah, blah, blah. He's always on time. Never misses a beat. No. Like,
yes.
It would have worked as a story written down because that would all just be, you know, narrative.
Yes. That would be her thoughts.
Yeah.
Not out loud. Yeah.
And they do narration at one point, which then made me think, why isn't all her dialogue in narration? That would have been annoying and you would have had to film a lot of B-roll, but it would have felt more natural.
Oh, yeah, because when she's driving off with the completely destroyed car that shouldn't be moving, that's all narration, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is. Also, I loved the just the car getting more and more destroyed as well. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
The Mercedes, yeah, is a Mercedes that they set up in the first scene where he's like, you've got your Mercedes, like, it's all about the Mercedes and it gets...
Yes, the very expensive car.
$4,000 and it'll be like you just picked it up from the shop. $25,000, Mrs. Lancaster, it'll be like you just drove yourself out of the shop.
Well, I think she was going slightly crazy at that point, was the idea.
That's a common thing. I noticed a theme in some of the early one, the first film as well. There's a lot of people going mad in their horror, like Leslie Nielsen. There's another one where someone ends up laughing. I think it's in the crate. And then this one as well, like people just, because I guess that's pretty realistic.
Yeah. Well, she first hits a guy, which is already a traumatic experience for her, and then she keeps having to kill the same guy over and over again.
Yeah.
And he keeps appearing. She probably going a bit crazy, and I think the sort of allegory, some sort of meaning in this is that as her car gets more damaged, as he's getting more damaged, she is also getting more damaged, but mentally.
That is a theme, though. I'm just thinking about it now, and like half of the stories in the TV show are also about people slowly going insane.
Yeah.
There was one in the recent season, Pesticide, I think it was called, that makes no sense. But the entire arc is just this guy going slowly more and more crazy. That is definitely a Creepshow theme.
Yeah.
We should talk about Stephen King, though. He does play the truck driver who comes across the body of the hitchhiker at one point with a bunch of other people. He's great. His acting in these movies is ridiculous.
I think that's the idea. He hams it up, you know. It's great.
But yeah, that might be it. Because then it ends with the final animated short of the bullies chasing the kid into a corner and then getting attacked by giant Venus flytraps.
Are we led to believe that every issue of the Creepshow magazine that he's been getting, he's been ordering a Venus flytrap and he's been planting them and, like, cultivating them in this place?
I guess. Or is it a part of the book? Is this a part of the Creepshow comic?
All I know is that they like meat.
Oh, I did like the ending credits, though, which was Tom Savini as the creep just throwing magazines into the air as he drives away. That was good. Although the ending credits soundtrack, nowhere near as good as the first one. The first movie's ending credits are, like, ridiculous and very disturbing and just jumps all over the place. Whereas with this, it was like a jolly little theme tune.
Yeah.
That right there is Creepshow 2. Zach, is it an oldie or is it a goodie? What do you think?
I don't know. I haven't seen the first one, or at least haven't seen it in living memory. So I feel like I was a bit more light on this film. Whereas you guys are like, the first one was way better. What the fuck is this shit?
We were that guy.
This is garbage. This is terrible. And I'm like, oh, well, I thought it was all right. But the problem with it, I really feel, is the first one, I liked the story. I like the shopkeeper and sort of things and the sort of revenge thing. But it's not really a horror story.
It's not creepy.
And the last one's weird because it's got the self-narration thing. But I don't know how horrifying it was till the very end where he's just like a bloodied mess.
Yeah.
That was obviously a bit horrifying, but I don't know. I only really felt horrified in the second story. with that, like, the circling monster where they can't do anything, and that just sort of existential dread of they are trapped and they are going to die sort of thing.
Yeah.
That really got to me, the horror aspect.
Yeah.
The rest of the stories, yeah.
Yeah, and the kind of compounding of that horror. Like, at first you're like, oh, that's a bit creepy. Oh, it kills people. Okay, well, it can't get us. Oh, it can get up through the bits in the raft, so we're not even safe on the raft. Like, that kind of adding.
The escalation of the horror. Yeah. Because at first he sees the ducks die in it, he's like, "Oh, that's not good. What is that over there?" And then it looks like it was going to murder them, and then it does, and it's just all escalates until finally it jumps out of the water. Water is a big wave, and just
felt like a lot of a better pace. And
yeah.
Whereas the other two stories didn't feel as fleshed out. I don't know. I'll probably give it an oldie, but I would look to, you know, see the first one, probably. By the sound of it, it's much better.
It gets an oldie from me. I just don't think it aged very well. Whereas the first one, even though it's older, it's still really cool. Yeah, other than the raft story, which got ruined for me in the last, you know, minute of it, it's an oldie. Yeah, I wouldn't go and watch it again. The second one was creepy. The first one was a revenge story. And the last one was, in my opinion, gore for gore, like, for gore's sake. Like, look how cool we can do stunts and makeup.
I found the first one interesting, but there were a few things that held it back. As you mentioned, it's not really scary. The second one had some good stuff, but then also, it got kind of ruined at the end for me. And the third one was visually impressive, but I didn't care.
Again, it was like a story that we'd seen 1,000 times. I don't know how many times at the time when that film came out that story had been done of the, like, kill somebody and then be haunted by them or your, you know, subconscious.
Well, that's the thing, right? It doesn't. Nowadays, we're looking at it through the lens of all these other things that have come out.
Yeah.
And that's deliberately why we're not calling it bad. We're calling it old.
Yeah, old.
Yeah.
As well, like, with the first one, a lot of the first one is stuff that we've seen before as well, but that comic booky style, I think, is so much fun, and it really...
There were so many, like, the moment in the crate one where the monster kind of rears up and roars and behind it goes all like red and blue and it's like framed in like a triangle and it's just like, that's cool.
Yeah.
Wow, guys, that sounds so much fun. I'm so glad I didn't watch it.
I mean, I gave it to you. You could have watched it. But
I'm absolutely going to watch it after this. But I wanted the perspective of someone that hadn't seen it or hadn't seen it in living memory. And it was eh.
Yeah, I'm going to go... I really wanted to like this, but yeah, I'm going to go oldie as well, I think.
It relies on that middle story and that's not as good. It's not good enough to carry the whole film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we get into the next few segments, though, a quick roundup on the sequels, because there are multiple sequels to this. Originally, Creepshow 2 was meant to be 5 stories long, like the first one. The other two were going to be based off the King short stories Pinfall and Cat from Hell, the last of which sounds great.
Yeah.
They couldn't make them work with the budget, though, so instead the George Romero script for Cat from Hell was made as a part of a 1990 anthology movie called Tales from the Dark Side, instead, based off the TV show. Some people consider that film to be Creepshow 3, but Cat from Hell's the only Stephen King story in there, and for me, Creepshow, the movies at least, are... It all has to be Stephen King based, so I don't really think it is Creepshow 3, because there's like an Arthur Conan Doyle short story in there or something. It's like, but yeah, I still kind of want to check that out. There is an actual Creepshow 3, though. It came out in 2006 and is only called Creepshow 3 because the film publisher purchased the rights to call it Creepshow 3.
Wow.
So it's like Troll 2. It's got nothing to do with
yours. It completely ditches the comic book aspect. It's just a horror anthology and everyone hates it.
That sounds bad.
Then, in 2019, they started the Creepshow TV show, which is still airing. The second season's currently going out. And, it's pretty good. Most of it's pretty good. Some of them aren't great, but I like pretty much all of it.
Cool.
Yeah, well, that's a TV show about, like, short stories, right? You know, some of them will be better than others.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Yeah. I particularly loved, I think it was called The Finger, which was this weird, like, E.T., but very stupid and gory version. That was very funny. So yeah, I highly recommend that. Oh, and the Christmas special as well, which was like a Where Animals Anonymous, which was this like anonymous meeting of a bunch of people that turn into animals when the full moon comes out.
That's great.
That sounds so ridiculous.
Instead of pitching our own sequels, Jan, this year we are doing an add and remove segment.
Okay.
Where if there's one thing from the movie that you would add and one thing that you would remove to make it better, Zach, what have you got?
Well, I think we can all agree on, we can add or remove, just change the molestation scene.
Yeah.
Yep.
Make that a bit better, because that saves the one good story that we have. I don't know how to save the last story exactly. I've pretty much said what I'd add and remove. I would remove her speaking out loud, just have it as narration.
Yes.
I have no idea how to make that one more horrifying.
Maybe just make it shorter.
Yeah, it's shorter, I guess, yeah. And then the first one, I know how to fix that one, which is only have, like, the intro for the good people be, like, 2-3 minutes, you know, 5 minutes to establish them. And then we can see them being hunted down and, like, tracked. And, you know, murdered ironically, that sort of thing. That's what I'd add and or remove.
How about you, Jen?
Obviously remove the sexual assault and add an awesome sex scene, like 80s as hell.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, you could put that down to that running theme of people going slowly hysterical or crazy in that horrific thing. They're tired, they've gone a little bit crazy, and they decide to have sex on the run.
They're licking eyebrows in 80s
yeah,
style.
Yeah, it's weird, yeah.
Yummy.
And then I would probably remove her inner monologue from the third one and make it either not at all or narration. Make it shorter, or instead of just having him clinging to the car constantly, I don't know, have him more stalky, make it a little bit more creepy as opposed to just like, it's a lot of action for the whole thing. Driving through forests and things, like it was a lot.
Maybe it happens over like a week.
Yeah, no matter where she goes, she gets the car fixed or something, and I don't know, there was so many times where I was like, he's going to be in the back seat, like he'll pop up through, you know, things like that. Look in the rearview mirror, there he is, like, more jump scares, even though I fucking hate jump scares. Pull more jump scares in.
Yep.
The first one, same with Zach, like shorten the start and have a longer, maybe I just like people being hunted and stalked, that's a running theme here.
Sounds great to me.
Remove the in-between introductions. Get rid of them. I hated them. Hated them. Hated the creep character. I thought he was annoying. It reminded me of, and I know that, like Zach said, looking through the lens of stuff you've seen since, but we can't help but do that. What was that TV show, Scary Stories, happened to a friend of a friend? Freaky Stories, was it? I think it was just called Freaky Stories. I just loved the first one, the way they did it with the comic book. So, yeah, remove those in-between bits, shorten the stories and have an extra story in there. The cat from hell sounds awesome. So.
Yeah, I would probably do the same thing. I'd remove animation, just get rid of that style of animation and go back to the comic book panning. And I'd probably just add Romero as the director again.
Yeah.
Just to bring in that comic bookness that he brought in, like the lights changing and all that sort of stuff, I thought was pretty good. Just make it more stylized, I think, is what I'm saying, instead of feeling like a pretty average B-movie, like horror, which is what some of these, pretty much all of these felt like. All right, we'll move on from that to the other new segment we're doing this year, which is the checklist. This is the segment where we have a list of tropes, Jen, from all the films we've done this year, and we slowly add to it. We're going to go through the list, see how tropey this film is compared to other films this year. I'm thinking, actually, it's probably going to get a lot of these. The first trope is the movie bad porridge. I think this movie's awful porridge. Zach, creeps make awful porridge.
Yep, nope. Doesn't make a good porridge. And talking about freaky stories reminded me of the worms in the popcorn. That's bad porridge.
Yeah.
And just even thinking about that, I'd say that ooze pile, that ooze that's going in the lake, it's probably not going to make great porridge.
That's not good.
You're going to eat some
porridge.
Of that, your lips are going to melt off. That's no good.
No.
That's bad porridge. Jen, what do you think?
I don't know what that means, so I'm going to say bad porridge. I would not eat it for breakfast. No.
Correct. Then it's bad porridge. Boom. Easy question.
Is the whole point of that trope to confuse guests? Maybe. Bad porridge.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay, were the characters dumb?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
It's a horror film, so yes.
Was another trope from this year has been that the bad guys have been from foreign countries. I don't know if there necessarily was a bad guy in these stories.
Other than Sam. He wasn't Native American when he should have been, so... Kind of, yes, he was from a foreign country. He was from England.
That is true.
Yes, the English.
Colonialism.
Yeah.
Bang.
Colonialism was the villain the whole time.
It gets that trope. It definitely does not get all the good guys live.
Everyone dies.
Everyone dies. Was there a power outage in this movie? Yes, there was at the start of The Hitchhiker. The reason why she's woken up late is because there was a power outage that reset his alarm clock.
Yep.
It's hard for some of these because they say character like the lead, and there wasn't really a lead in these, but I guess we can talk about all of them, jump around, whatever. We'll make it work. Does the lead sacrifice themselves?
No.
Nope. Not at all.
Does the female lead fall in love with the male lead?
No.
No.
But also, there weren't any great female characters in this anyways.
So. No.
There was the wife, but she was already in love, and her main goal was to be racist. So
yeah.
It wasn't really her thing. So, yeah.
Were there dead animals?
Oh, you had the ducks die in the oil slick.
Yeah, ducks got eaten.
That's right. It does get that trope.
Those are definitely not alive ducks. So the dead animals... Boom.
And the dude at the start, the creep, where he's sitting and he eats some meat. That's a dead animal.
Oh, true.
That's true.
If we're going to split hairs, you know.
I mean, technically, yeah.
Yeah, canonical. Yeah, absolutely.
Is it a ripoff of other famous movies? Yeah, probably. Does a vehicle break down? Oh boy, does it.
Yep,
that car gets slowly destroyed throughout the entire film. Was there slow motion? I don't think there... Oh, no, at the very end when the sludge thing jumps up and eats him, I think that was in slow motion.
That is slow-mo.
Yep.
Was there a song with the title of the movie in it? Not in this one. There was in the first one, though.
Yeah.
We could give it the proxy.
Yep.
Trope.
Noticeable green screen, they couldn't afford it. Being knocked on the head and falling unconscious. Yes, in The Hitchhiker, she falls unconscious, but that's more because she faints.
Yeah, she does get a head injury, though. Oh, well, the guy gets axed in the head. That counts.
I don't think that's in the spirit of that trope. The spirit of that trope is that it's like one tap and they're out, you know?
Yeah.
Or like someone gets punched in the face and they're immediately unconscious, you know? That sort of thing.
Yeah, so it doesn't... I don't think it gets that one.
Narration. Yes, it does get it, but it didn't get it as much as it should have gotten it.
Yeah.
Oh, and it also works for the only four sequels trope, which is clips from the first movie. It doesn't get that one.
No.
There were no clips from the first film at all.
All right. So now it's time for the segment everyone's been waiting for. It's time for the most horrible, the most disgusting, the most creepy of reviews. It's time for the raving reviews segment. This week we get the most horrible, most idiotic people to write reviews on Rotten Tomatoes to creep you out and absolutely scare you at the state of humanity. As always, I get the reviews from Rotten Tomatoes, the audience score, not the critics, because the critics sometimes know what they're talking about, and we don't want any of that. Yeah, so how this works is I'm going to tell you a review, and you got to guess the score. The scores are between 0.5, that's important, there's 0.5s, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
This week, I'm starting off with a minor segment in it, which is called My Grading System's Better Than Yours.
I haven't had this in a while.
Which is, within the review, they've put their own grading system because out of 5 doesn't work well enough for them. So the first one we have is from Tyler.
Tyler.
And Tyler says, while some of the stories are interesting, they either feel very rushed or they dragged on. For far too long. Grade C. So, Sandro, I'm going to get you to guess out of 5. What do you think this person, Tyler, has graded this out of 5?
Well, it should be 3.5, but I'm going to say it's a 3.
I was also thinking a 3.
You were also thinking a 3. So you're both locking in 3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 3 out of 5. Oh, well done. It. That's a point for each of you. A point for each of you. Well done. Well done. Dylan says, not an extremely satisfying follow-up, but I've seen worse.
Mm.
C.
Oh, no.
I don't think it's going to be a 3, because I don't think you would do 2 in a row the same, Zach. That's just me.
Yeah, I've never done that before, right, Sandra?
I don't think it's a 2. Oh, maybe it's a 2 point. I don't think it... It sounds like you liked it, so I don't know. Yeah, 4.
Okay, 4. I'm going to... I'm going to go 2.5, actually. I'm going to sit on that
2.5. 2.5? Why a 2.5?
Because it could be 3, but you've been mentioning it a lot, which makes me think that it isn't. So that's why.
It is 2.5. Hey. Congrats. Now on to the real reviews. Ross said, sad, tired, cheap, and about as scary as a cold cup of Joe. I'll stick with the much better first film.
That's a good review.
2.
2.
Ooh, Jen. 2. Jen's out of the gate. 2. Bang. She's on it. She knows what this one is.
1.
Ooh.
I'll go lower.
Ooh, unfortunately, you're both wrong, as it's a 0.5.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't that bad. He really hated it.
Yep.
As much as he hates cold coffee.
Cameron says, more ridiculous tales in this unnecessary sequel.
That's not too negative. 2.5. Yeah, 2.5.
Okay, okay.
2.
It's 1 out of 5.
Oh,
it's
okay.
1 out of 5. Yeah, no. Unnecessary, as in complete garbage, obviously.
Mm, right, fair enough.
Okay, all right. Giuliano, who says, exactly what you would expect.
Thanks, Giuliano.
So, Jen, what do you think exactly what you would expect means?
3.
3? Ooh.
Because exactly what you expect means... He didn't have high expectations, which means he's probably been potentially pleasantly surprised. Because that's exactly what I said about the Mortal Kombat movie. It's exactly what I expected, and I gave it like 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah, same.
Then why didn't you go 3.5 instead of 3?
All right, Zach, 3.5. If it's 3, I'm going to come through this computer like Creepshow style and kill you.
Well,
okay. My life is on the line, Sandro. Please help. What's your risk?
I'm going to go 1.5.
1.5. Oh, you're going for the lower end.
Yeah.
It's 4 out of 5.
Yes.
It's 4 out of 5.
Because he might have expected it to be awesome, and then he said, it's exactly what you expect. So unless you know his expectations, unless you've got his origin story...
It's almost like it's a complete garbage review, and the only way you'd know what he'd expect was to know the score.
If he narrated, like, that last story.
Yep. We have Harriet. It's okay. My favourite was the carved-up lake floaty dude.
What was the opening of that? Sorry, what was the first?
Sorry, I couldn't get through all that. It's okay. My favourite was the crap-top lake floaty dude.
That's good. That's a good review.
It's okay. Usually means like, yeah, 3.5.
You're guessing 3.5? Okay, Sandro, sorry. That one makes me laugh every time I read it.
I'll go 3.
It's 2.5. It's 2.5. Yeah, okay. It's a bit lower. What's the scores so far, Sandra?
Jen's on 1, I'm on 2.
Yikes.
Mainly just got those from the opening 2.
Yep. All right, Jen, this is the one to bring it back, all right? So you've got to be in sync with Liam, all right? Reviewed on the blog, http://less-than-3films.blogspot.com/2010/5/creepshow2gornick1987.html. What do you think he rated it?
Oh no.
What was the review?
That was it. That was the review.
Is it a link to this person's blog? And so we assume that when you click on it, he's done a pretty in-depth review. I'm going to go 2.
2, all right.
2, why is that?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's fair.
I'm David Lynch. I'm not elaborating. I don't know.
Yeah, no. That's very fair. Because there's no way you should know what he's put down because he just linked to his blog.
He seems like an attention seeker. So I figure if he's linking people to his blog, he's written something that he thinks is potentially controversial, like a bad review, and it might, you know, people might argue with him. He's like a troll.
Ah, yes, but you have to think about this. Most of the reviews for this movie are negative.
Okay. And that's why I'm thinking 3.5.
It's 3.5! Sandro gets it! Wow.
Okay. Well done, Sandro. It's like you've done this before.
Oh, thanks. Yep.
Congratulations, Sandro. Yes, I think this is your second win.
My second win.
Yay!
Thank you.
He's only done this like every week, so
probably one or twice. All right, that is the two for Creepshow 2 on episode 122.
Whoa, coinkadink? Probably.
All right, that's the episode. Thank you so much for joining us, Jen. Was there anything you wanted to plug?
Nah, everything's done. Everything that I've been involved in is done.
There's the Fringe thing, but I don't think we can talk about that yet.
Not yet.
No Doubt podcast should be back at some point, which is you, Rob, and myself.
Yeah,
until then, thank you so much for coming on again. It's a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me, you creeps.
Hey.
Oof.
Hey.
Wow, rude.
No, it's like when you call someone a nerd lovingly, like you're a bunch of nerds.
Oh, I see.
You're a bunch of creeps, yeah.
It hits differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
It hits differently.
Yeah. Like calling myself a bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. That everyone does. Yeah. Every day.
Everyone does that. All right. If you like the show and want to help us out, as I mentioned, Patreon, all stuff up there. Mortal Kombat review for the new film, probably for the old ones too at some point soon because people are voting for that. Link in the description. Or you can just tell a friend, that also helps out. You can review us on iTunes, that helps us out there. Although apparently iTunes algorithm has been really messed up lately, so that's been a lot of fun to deal with on my part. Lots of emails being sent to Apple. Love it. And there's links to our Facebook page, our Instagram in the description. We are Oldie But A Goodie Pod everywhere, including Gmail if you want to send us an email, and also YouTube when I can be bothered to post the episodes on YouTube because it's quite delayed. But anyway, all that in the description if you want to check it out. We will see you next week, which is episode 123, which is funny.
Yep. It's 1, 2, 3. I always like 123 because it's 1, 2, 3.
It's 1, 2, 3. Zach, you're picking what we're talking about on 1, 2, 3.
Oh, what are the options for me, Sandro, that you can get up right now for me to pick from?
There are 1, 2, 3 options.
Wow. Crazy. Illuminati confirmed. Oh my God. It's all coming together.
The first option is called Gardens of Stone. It is a film directed by Francis Ford Coppola.
I was going to say, it has to be a bunch of an Italian family's front yard.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a Francis Ford Coppola film. He's, you know, best known for the Godfather trilogy. It's about a war veteran who becomes a guard and then decides to teach all the other guards about war.
Hmm.
There's also Hot Pursuit. It's about a pirate who forces this random dude to join his pirate ship after the dude misses his flight to visit his girlfriend.
Sounds great.
The natural thing you do after missing your flight to visit your girlfriend is to become a pirate.
And then your final option is River's Edge, which is a very early Keanu Reeves movie. It's about this real mean dude who kills a person and then tells his friends about it, and all the friends have to struggle to keep the secret. Which does sound quite Stephen King-esque, actually.
Mm.
Having a secret that you got to keep. So yeah, Francis Ford Coppola arty movie, pirates, or Keanu Reeves, but it's sad.
Now, Jen, what are your thoughts on these movies here? I wanna know your thoughts.
Well, I just googled each one as Sandro. I don't know if that's allowed, but I googled each one as Sandro said it, and the tagline for Hot Pursuit has got me. She promised him 10 days together in paradise. He never dreamed how far he'd have to go. So that got me. And it's John Cusack, so.
Oh, yeah.
That one seems like it's up my alley, so.
All right, well, with Jen's excellent suggestion for the one that I was going to pick anyway, I'd like to pick Hot Pursuit, please.
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
All right, next week, Hot Pursuit. Sounds like a plan. Wrap it up with the best quote from Creepshow 2. My favorite is, I feel the need for weed, dude. Yeah, woo!
Mine would be, Have you ever seen an oil slick? Times four.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.